So let me just say a few words of introduction. I always say I'd like to introduce myself, mostly because I get very embarrassed when I'm up here and they talk about me and I think, oh dear Lord, I'll never be able to live up to that. So easier for me to talk about myself a little bit. I am a physician, as you all know. I always say I was born and raised at Stanford from a medical perspective. But that was really, and it was a wonderful experience, and when I was all done with all of my training, I actually taught at Stanford for many years. So I am not one of the doctors who's against Western medicine. I always tell people I'm not against anything. I am for whatever each individual person needs. People come to me, I have a private practice now called Transformational Medicine. So it's a rather catchy title. And a lot of people come to me thinking they're coming because I'm going to side with them and not like what Western medicine does, but that's actually really not the truth. And I imagine, as I speak tonight, although I tend to speak extemporaneously, some stories will come up that will just show you some of the miracle that can happen that really has nothing to do with what modality we're using, but has much more to do with how we attune ourselves, how open we can be to that which is trying to flow through all of us, which is really what I'm going to speak about. If I tell any stories tonight about things that have happened in my life or my world, I'd like to say right now that they're not really stories about me. I'm not saying them in any way to say, look at what I did. Quite the contrary. Any stories that I tell you will be much more to say to all of us, look at what we can all do. Look at what is possible with grace. So many things that happen in our lives. As Santosh and I were walking in, we were just talking about the nature of our lives. So I'm a physician, and for many, many years I had the third largest practice in the United States in internal medicine. That's a lot of medicine for a lot of years. Worked out to be about 16 to 18 hours a day, often 7 days a week, for the biggest part of my adult life. I still practice medicine. I'm a minister at the Ananda Church up the way. I'm also the manager of the whole church and the congregation, which means a lot in terms of time and energy and membership and fundraising and, you know, fiscal plant functioning. Of course, I have a family, and I meditate a couple of hours every day, and I exercise. So you can hear, I'm sure like many of you, if we look at our lives in a certain way, sort of humanly impossible. I mean, you think about how can all this possibly happen? How can we do all this, never mind do it with a kind of lightness of spirit and, for the most part, great joy? So when I say it's humanly impossible, I really mean that. Were I just depending on myself and this own little bit of energy and all of the personality things that I have, all the ways that I'm a pain in the rear end and picky and this and that, I'd be getting in my way all over the place. So really, it's about learning how to tap into some source of energy that is way greater than any one of us could be, but in some ways turns out to be a culmination of all of the energy that is all of us. So I'm only telling you this because it matters in terms of this understanding of the word wellness. As you all read in the, I just went out and read what I had written probably 6 or 8 months ago now for the brochure. So this wellness that I'm talking about is sort of, has nothing to do with the notion of health. Health, which we usually think about, meaning how is this physical body, or in a more expansive way, how is our mind doing? That's what we think of when we think, is somebody healthy or not? But when we use the term wellness, we're talking about something completely other. We're talking about something that not only transcends the state of the physical body, but that is more than anything a state of mind. And that's very important because it gives us back a kind of power and ability that we often don't have over what's going on with our body. How many of us, and maybe a couple of you out there, but if there were two in the room, I would be surprised, who could say to me that you know you will never get sick because you know how to manage your energy and nothing's ever going to happen to your body. Most of us can't or wouldn't say that. Things happen, and they happen obviously often for a reason, and I'm going to try and speak a little bit about energy tonight because it's essential, it's the core of almost everything I teach. But we all have the ability to make the choice to be well, every one of us. As I said, it's a state of mind. We can always change our mind. We can always cultivate a new state of mind. So we can decide to be well in the face of anything. Now, most of us, even those of us here tonight, and every one of us, we've come to East West. We're not sitting in a classroom in Stanford University right now. And it's not to say that maybe some of you are students or faculty at Stanford, as was I. So again, I'm not against it. I'm saying when you go to a class at Stanford, you're usually looking for something else. When you come to East West, it's because you're already willing to sort of play outside of the box, the proverbial box, whatever the box is. So I know that in some ways, I am doing what is commonly called preaching to the choir, which is wonderful. It's why I'm speaking here now and not at Stanford anymore. At some point, I decided that I really didn't want to have to try and convince people. I wasn't interested in that. Really much more love speaking to people who are open to this, who are coming because they're looking for some other way of being in life. So I'm saying that to say I know who I'm speaking to. And even given that, now I'm including me. I could be down there. It just so happens tonight I'm up here and I'm speaking, but it doesn't matter. You know that old saying, we teach best what we most need to learn? I could as easily be sitting down there. As much as we want to live by at least different, if not higher, more expansive principles, if as much as we have some notion of energy, still, for most of us in this room, change is hard. And if the box that we grew up in is this big, and we say, I want to live in a box this big, I don't want to be stuck in here. So we go to a box this big, which may even be exponentially bigger than anything we've seen or known before, but mostly it has nothing to do with our full potential. Mostly it has nothing to do with what's out there and available for all of us. And it's that I want to speak to tonight. And I want to speak to it because affirming that is the most important thing in the world that we can do. Today I was seeing a patient in my practice, so I told you I have a practice now called transformational medicine. And as a rule, in that little practice, I don't practice any medicine. I don't even have an examining table there, or I rarely bring my stethoscope there. I talk to people, and I coach them. And I do offer second medical opinions or third medical opinions, but I don't do any of the medical work there now. But a man came to see me today, lovely man, wonderful man, very successful in the outside world in Silicon Valley, who's having trouble not enjoying opiates. And I happen to have a subspecialty in the field of addiction medicine, which I went into because addiction medicine is the one area in medicine where you're allowed to speak about spirituality. You can come out of that box, the closet, you can come out of that closet and actually talk about spiritual things in the field of addiction medicine. You can't do that otherwise, or they mostly, in traditional medicine, look at you like you've lost your mind, which of course I'd like to tell them I'd love to lose my mind and get beyond mine, but they wouldn't understand that either, so there we go. But this man was saying to me, no matter what I said to him, about moving on in life, making other choices for himself. And I was trying to find a thread, a way that I could connect with him that would ring as true to him. And this is only the second time I've seen him. And in all fairness to him, last week when I met him, he was taking 300 milligrams of oxycodone a day. And so it's only a week that he's off of that. So he's still really literally not in his right mind. But he chose to keep telling me, no matter what I said, that's easier said than done. That's easier said than done. I agree with you completely, Shanti, and I'd love to do that, but that's easier said than done. And I said to him, that is not a good affirmation. To keep telling yourself why you can't or won't do something is really not the way to help yourself make a good change in your life. Because the change in your life is not simply getting off of opiates. The change in your life is, how do you find something to live for? How do you find, you know, we were joking in here before, Santosh was asking me, did I not want to be, have light? Did I not want to be in the light or something, whatever he said, some people were in here. And I said, no, I don't want those spotlights. I'd rather find the light that's coming from within me. And it's really true for all of us. And I was trying to say to him, don't say that. Even if we say to ourselves, I haven't yet been able to accomplish that. I haven't done that yet. I haven't been able to quit smoking yet. Inherent in that is the affirmation that I will. And it's a very different energy. It totally is a positive, uplifting, the magnetic bar that you're applying to yourself is one that's saying, yes, I can, I will. Maybe not now, we don't have to even say those words, but I will. And it sets us up in a completely different way to move forward in life. So this whole notion of wellness, which has nothing to do with what's going on in the body, Paramahansa Yogananda, who happens to be my spiritual teacher, but it doesn't matter. He doesn't need to be anybody else's teacher. And in fact, you don't even have to have the teacher right now. But he said some very wise things, and one of them is that every situation in life is neutral. This is very profound. What changes is how we deal with it, how we cope with it. Now, I know I'm looking out in a room full of mostly adults. I don't think just because I'm in medicine that I'm the only one who's had this experience. But I can run into 2, 3, 5 people in the course of a day. So the other thing I do, the way I remember medicine now and keep it in my head, is that I work at Kaiser Hospital in their urgent care clinic. So I do urgent care, you know, 4, 5, 8 days a month or 8 shifts a month. It's just like this. It's like beat the clock. Every 20 minutes somebody comes in. A lot of medicine still, but just in a much more limited way. And I can see, how many people do I see in the course of the day who has a backache or a headache or who cut their hand or whatever it is, it doesn't matter. What's fascinating is that everybody deals with it differently. So we all have our own way of dealing with this situation. So it brings us closer to understanding what Yogananda was saying, when he's saying every situation in life is neutral. You know, some people love vanilla, some people hate it. Does it make vanilla good or bad? You know, it's a simple example, but it's absolutely true. I often tell the tale on my husband, who doesn't like dealing with anything that goes wrong in his body. My husband really, he loves to think that if he gets it all together, he can absolutely live a totally predictable life. I mean, all the more power to him. But most of us know that's really not what life is like. So one day he called me at Kaiser, which he never does. I mean, a year could go by and he wouldn't call me during the day. When I look down and I see his number, I pick up the phone, no matter what I'm doing. He said to me, are you busy? I said, I'm working in urgent care clinic at Kaiser. Of course I'm busy. What do you need? He said, well, call me when you have time. I have this situation, he said. I said, you probably ought to tell me right now. I wasn't sure I was going to be able to let go and focus on whatever was going on. So he said to me, something happened to my finger. I can't straighten it out anymore. He said, I was just working around the house. So anyway, of course, I knew right away it's what's called a mallet finger, and it's usually because you've torn a little tendon, so you no longer have the ability. He said, I just want to explain it to you, and my finger's just always pointing down. I said, I know, honey, I know what's going on. I said, look, make a makeshift split, and we'll talk about it when I get home. So the treatment of that is that you never take your finger out of a splint for 2 months. I mean, you never do. You shower with it. When the splint gets wet and you have to change it, you put your hand down like this and you slide it onto another, because often the tendons will either move back into place or repair themselves. That mallet finger became the center of our lives for months. I mean, the center. It was like the worst thing in the world. At the very same time, a very dear friend of mine, who was a musician and a construction worker, had an accident and lost 3 fingers on his right and dominant hand. And it's just, I swear, I'm teasing about this, but honestly, this is really the truth. I didn't feel judgmental of my husband. I really don't. We're all doing the best we can. You know, and it's unfair for me to tell tales on him particularly, because this is being recorded, but there you have it. He's used to it. It's why he doesn't come to my talks anymore. But this man who lost 3 fingers on his right hand, who was going to need to find a different profession, a different way of being, was just genuinely sort of like, okay, this is going to present other challenges and other opportunities, and let's move on. What am I going to do with it? Without a beat's pause. It never affected him. And there was my husband walking around like this, like with his little injured paw that he wanted me to look at all the time. You know, each human being is different. But we all always have the opportunity to continue to bring ourselves to that point where less and less are we doing this in life. Really? You know what I mean? Swaying from extremes. Oh my God, I feel great now. This is terrible. Because that's the way life is. It's very much like a pendulum. If we feel great in one moment, chances are we're going to be let down in the next moment. I remember many, many years ago in my late 20s, I had never heard the word Swami. I had never seen a Swami. And I walked into this conference called the Mandala Society Holistic Health Conference. Nowadays, these words are so common. There's mandalas everywhere. We have some understanding of what holistic health means. In those days, they were brand new words. I thought, oh, great, this means somebody else really understands that the mind and body work together. That's where I was. That's how arrogant I was. And it turns out, this man, Swami Satchitananda, who maybe many of you know, was there, and he was the quintessential Swami. He was in long orange robes, big gray beard down to here. And I listened to that man talk to a room of 3,000 people for about 10 minutes, and I turned to my husband and I said, I don't know what these words mean, but my life is about to be different now than it has been or than I thought it was going to be. It was like transformation happened. I didn't understand what I was talking about at all. I probably had never even heard the word transformation at that point, never mind having a practice that's called that now. But, I mean, this was almost 40 years ago. But he said in that conference that he was going to be leading a 3-day workshop right after the conference. And I said to my husband, we're going. And he said, well, we had, like, work and things are going on. And I said, I'm going. Everything else can wait. So I went. And the first day of the conference, he didn't show up till about 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And his assistants, the other swamis are coming, and the other monks, and we're all sitting there. And when he walks in at 1, and did anybody in this room know Satchitananda at all? No. Big smile from the inside out. He just was constantly, he had a twinkle in his eye. Fabulous man. And he walked in like Indians do, with his little head going like this. So, were you disappointed? Of course we were all disappointed. We were there for him. And he just sort of said, you see, if you make an appointment, you can have a disappointment. But the thing he said, like, when he was just saying, like, live each moment in life. you know, and it was beautiful. But the thing that he said, why I'm telling you this story right now, is because they had made this huge throne for him. This huge, the way Indians do, you know, this big chair that was covered in flowers. And he wouldn't get up there. He said, here's the problem. If you ever step up on a throne, you can be pretty sure you're going to be dethroned. You know, and it was just, I mean, such wisdom pouring really through that man. Let's see if I can capture where I was and why I was telling you about him. But anyway, it hardly matters. It was a transformational moment, and it was a time, like what I was starting to talk about before, when we realize that the possibilities are enormous. And that's what we have to open our minds to before we can speak about or understand the notion of wellness, that in the face of anything, at any time, whatever is going on in our lives, whatever it is, and I know as much as anybody, because I have a life, that things can be very hard. I mean, really hard. Not just, you know, you're sitting in a traffic jam and you think it's the worst thing in the world, but houses burn down. You know, tsunamis happen. Somebody you dearly love gets sick like that and they're gone. You know, your children don't turn out to be who you thought they were going to be. So that life can be so hard, and yet it is totally conceivable that we can find a way to be such that even if we're feeling frightened, sad, disappointed, all those things that we're all going to feel, it's part of what we're doing in this human body. Of course we're going to. We can't lose somebody we love dearly and not feel about it. But can you imagine that could be going on, and that the whole time there's a part of you that can actually still know that you are well, that you are still at peace inside, not sad, but that is something that is going on in your life. But instead of living in such a way where it is your life, which is how most of us live most of the time, that is, whatever's happening in the moment grabs us, and that's what we live in terms of. But that we can expand and expand and expand mentally, psychically, and ultimately spiritually. Ultimately, we have to be willing to grow spiritually for this to really work, so that all those things that are going on, they're still going on. But it's like, instead of living on the first or second floor of a high rise, so that all the noise on the street is right in your house, whatever's going on out there energetically is affecting you, you've now moved up to the 45th floor. All that stuff is still going on. It's still happening. Nothing has changed. And you can go down and you can be a part of it anytime, but you don't live moment by moment in terms of it. And it's an extraordinarily freeing and uplifting experience. And every one of us has it in us to do that. This is the moment in my talk where I come back to the one common denominator of all of my talks, no matter what I'm speaking about, because it's essential to understand most of what's going on in life. And that is the first law of thermodynamics, which says energy can neither be created nor destroyed, but it can always be transformed. And I want to say that again because, interestingly, I didn't know this until recently, but we don't really know who wrote or discovered the first law of thermodynamics. I was always trying to quote Einstein or Newton or somebody, but I tried to look it up and we don't really know. I mean, I cannot find who actually did that. But nonetheless, it's a physical law of the universe. It's nothing that I think or that you think or that you can agree with or not agree with. The physicists and all the scientists tell us it's true. Energy can neither be created nor destroyed, but it can always be transformed. And it doesn't say sometimes under certain circumstances, when you really want to or when it's going to be transformed into a good way, it can be transformed. It says always, you know? And in a minute, I'm going to talk a little bit about change. But there's this wonderful saying about change that I found in a book called The Miracle of Change, which is one of my favorite books of all time. Unfortunately, you can't buy it here, but you can get it for 99 cents on Amazon. And it's a fabulous book filled with absolute genius and inspiration. There's a saying in there that says, change is never made without inconvenience, even from worse to better. And it's just so right. It's hard for all of us to change. But here's a physical law of the universe that says everything can change. Now I really would like to fast forward about 100 years to 15 years ago when the physicists decided to tell us that they have now discovered that everything is energy. Everything is energy. That nothing happens in this universe that's not energy. Not you, not the chair you're sitting on, not the sound that's coming from the air conditioning, not a fragrance, not a thought. Everything is energy. And they have realized that and realized that it all comes down to the same common denominator. There was a physicist who spoke here last night. What's his name? Atzmat Gami. I didn't come to his talk, but I've read a couple of his books. And he writes about this stuff, as do all of the physicists now, because they know it to be true. I mean, the really, literally, the most world-renowned physicists are saying we know everything's energy simply vibrating at different frequencies. So there's, you are not made of anything different than the chair you're sitting on. Literally, you're not. You're not made of anything different than the thought you have or the food you ate for dinner. They're all vibrating at different frequencies. So in our grossest frequency, which is like our body, it's the physical world, things are really vibrating like this, basically. And as energy gets more and more subtle, and as it moves closer to the center, to a state of calm, oneness, there's almost no vibration. And this is how people, for years, I never understood this, although somehow, intuitively, I always believed it. But things like people doing psychic surgery, I mean, strange things, really strange things. Now that you know my CV and you know I'm smart and people loved me and I had a great medical practice and I was at Stanford, not that any of those things make me sane, but I am very sane, sort of very normal and usual. But even things like people appearing in two places at once, or Jesus reappearing days after he died, how do those things happen? How is it that we think it happens that Mozart could write a symphony at the age of 5? That would be virtually impossible. I mean, if you think about it, 5 years old, and we know he wrote a symphony. And recently, I was reading a book called Talks with Great Composers. I'm still reading it. Absolutely brilliant book. A man went and he interviewed Brahms in the late 1800s. But Brahms said to him, you can't publish this till 50 years after I die. So everything that Brahms said to him about himself, about Beethoven, about many other great composers, he didn't want anybody. He felt it would take that long for his music to be appreciated. And he didn't want anybody hearing these things until his music was firmly entrenched, which of course we all know was Brahms. It came to pass. And he was right. But even in the first 15 pages of that book, Brahms says, you know, anybody can learn all of the details about music, how to write the notes, and he goes on and talks about all the things that people learn in school about music. He said, but to really hear great music and to basically be able to bring that great music out for other people to learn, to hear, he said, that has nothing to do with what we learned in school. In fact, we have to unlearn a lot of it. He said, we call that, he says this, if you pick up the book, you'll see. We call it, this was in the late 1800s, subconscious. He said, what we should be calling it is superconscious. That's what he said. He said those words, which is really quite amazing. He said, you have to get yourself in a totally different state, so that you are beyond mind to be able to hear this music and write it the way I write great music. And he said Beethoven knew this more than anybody. And he even says in there about, I've been saying for 30 years in talks, how could Mozart write a symphony when he was 5 years old? What is that? He had to be hearing that music somehow. You can't know all the parts for all the instruments. I mean, think about it, a symphony. It's not like a few bars of music. Brahms actually says this. So that's that energy, that's living in the age of energy, where we begin to realize that we are not limited by this body. That's not what's going on here. We're not limited by the thoughts that we think. So we need to begin to find ways, and I mean this, although if I didn't say this right now, it could sound funny, but it's not funny. We need to be able to find ways to get out of our minds. Not out of our minds crazy, but beyond mind, to transcend our mind. Because even the very great minds are limited by what the mind can do. And when you start hearing these stories or living these lives where you put yourself in a position to see what most of us would call miracles, right? We see certain things. So I traveled around India for a while with a man. It's just a for instance, but I could give you thousands of them. And I traveled around India with him for a number of years, who whenever he went to a different state in India, he would speak their language. And he would lecture. It's not called lecturing in India, it's called satsang. I mean, he would sit with them and talk to them and explain the stories of the Gita and the Ramayana for 6-8 hours. And when we would come out, he would say to me, Shanti, I don't speak a word of their language. And I would say, you just spoke it for 6 or 8 hours or whatever it was. And he would say to me, right now, I couldn't say a word. What is that? It's the same thing we're talking about, like with Mozart. There is a place that's available to every one of us. You see, we call that a miracle. Thich Nhat Hanh, who's a fabulous and very well-known Buddhist teacher, says miracles are natural. When they do not occur, something has gone wrong. What he's saying is, when we think we're limited to what happens in this body or with this mind, something's going wrong. It's too confining. We're living in terms of all of these self-definitions. I like this, I don't like that, I can do this, I can't do that. Like my patient was telling me all day today, he paid me for an hour and a half of my time to tell me over and over, easier said than done, easier said than done. Okay, guess what? For him, it's going to be easier said than done. But if somebody comes in and decides to start practicing affirmations, simple affirmations, and you actually do them for 5 or 10 or 15 minutes a day, in the most remarkable way, things become possible that you couldn't do even a week ago. Even a week ago. Listen to this story. This is a story about wellness. It's a perfect story for tonight. Many years ago now, a woman came in to see me in my practice. I was still doing some medicine then. She walked into my office, and honestly, I'm not exaggerating one bit of this. This is what happened. I go out in the waiting room. I say, hi, Maury, come on in. She comes in. She sits down. She says to me, look, I want to tell you right away, I don't like doctors. I don't like any doctors. I already don't like you. I don't trust doctors. I haven't been to a doctor in 10 years. She just goes on and on and on like that. And I'm sitting sort of, you know, not behind my desk because I don't sit like that, but next to her with my... So when she was all done, I just said to her, hi, my name is Shanti. You know, I mean, like, couldn't we introduce ourselves first? Yeah. I spent an hour and a half with this woman, which I always do with new people. And she tells me this story. Here's her story. Yesterday, she said, I've been sick for a year. She said, I've had abnormal vaginal bleeding. She was a woman in her 60s for a year. I know something's really wrong with me. Yesterday, I went to the gynecologist. She said, I was in her office for 10 minutes, in and out. In those 10 minutes, she told me, I have an inoperable cancer, and she suggested I allow her to hook me up with hospice. So I just listened to that, and I tried to keep my face calm, even though I got really upset with the doctor. I mean, I believed that that probably happened, and I also believed it was conceivable that it was actually 10 minutes. But even if it was 20, I mean, who's going to call the woman a liar? And she said, so I'm here. I've heard good things about you, and I want you to tell me, is that true? You know, we're sitting there. I mean, this is not that much later. And I said to her, let me ask you a few questions. So I do a whole history on her that I do. So my history is a whole medical history. I mean, you're meeting me this way, but I'm also an internist, and I happen to be a rather good internist. I did a whole medical history on her. And then I asked her other things that I asked her. You know, where are you with regard to any religion or spirituality? Are you married? How's your marriage? Do you have children? How are the kids doing? I ask everybody this because all of this impacts how we are. And I was with her, as I told you, for an hour and a half, a minimum of 20 times, a minimum, this woman told me how much she hates her husband. She just said it over and over and over. I can't stand my husband. I hate my husband. Oh, now this is happening, she said. Oh, I was just going to leave him. The kids are grown and gone. Now, you know, mind you, this was a woman in her 60s. The kids had been long grown and gone. I didn't really think she was just about to leave her husband, but maybe in her mind she was. Now I've got this, most likely have this cancer. Now I can't leave. And I tried to talk to her a little bit about it, you know, what's in the relationship, but all she could say is how much she hated him. So we come to the end of the visit, and I said to her, look, let me get a CAT scan. Give me some time to speak to some people about whatever I see on it. Let's get some blood work. Really, I wanted to buy a little time for her and for me with her, because I told her to come back in 3 weeks. I could have had that all done in 2 days, but she didn't know that. When she was leaving, I said to her, I'd like to give you an assignment. And I wrote it on a prescription pad. I said, I want you to go home and say 3 nice things a day to your husband. And she says to me, oh, now that's not going to be easy. Just like that. I'm doing her perfectly. I'm no kidding. I'm not exaggerating. I said to her, well, I didn't say it was easy. I'm just saying I'd like to ask you to do it. She said to me, well, what would I say? I said, I don't know. I said, you told me you're upset because he's always away at work. Why don't you, when he's there, why don't you go up to him and put your arms around him and say to him, honey, I am so glad that you're home with me right now. And she was, oh, just like that. So I said, how about this? How about if you become an actress? Pretend, act like you're on a stage and you have to express love for this man. And I said, and you come up with 2 other things. So she grabs her stuff and grabs the prescription and storms out of the office, and I walk out and I said to my professional partner, I said, I don't think she's coming back. You know, she was mad at me. So 3 weeks go by and she comes back. And so I'm being rather impassive. And I talked to her, and in fact she had an inoperable tumor, which I knew that was going to happen. But I said to her, you know, look, here's your options. We could, if you want, try and irradiate this. There's things we could do to try and shrink it. You know, really buy you some time. I don't know that we can cure this, but, you know, I was very honest but very positive. And I was just giving her all of her options and telling her what we could do. And we talked, and we were together for about 45 minutes. And at the end of all of this, and she was going to go home and think about what she wanted to do, I said to her, so, Mari, how's everything at home? She says to me, great, why? And I said to her, are you serious? I said, you sat here 3 weeks ago telling me how much you hate your husband. This is a true story, by the way. And as I said to you, and I'm saying this to you parenthetically, I could tell you hundreds of stories. I could. I mean, if I always threaten to do a talk here and places where I speak, where I just tell stories, because they're remarkable. It's like a picture being worth 1,000 words, a story is. Remember, we're talking about wellness. And I said to her, Mari, 3 weeks ago you were in here, you were telling me how awful it was, you hated your husband. She was just like this, oh my God, Dr. Rubenstein. She said, you won't believe this. I thought, yeah, I will. I gave you the assignment, but I didn't say that out loud. She said, you know, I went home. She said, I was furious with you when I left. I said, I could tell. She said, I was never coming back. I said, that's what I thought. And she said, I was so mad at you that I decided to go home and do what you asked me to do to prove you wrong. And she said to me, within 3 days, I was living in a different home. She said, my husband took an immediate leave of absence from work. He has not left my side. She said, it was like we instantly fell in love, which I want to say to you, they did. They fell in love, not in the personal, romantic. They did that too. I helped that woman die. I went into her home for 3 months. I met her husband over and over. I met her children. I became part of that family. I helped her die at home. And I told you, I had the third largest medical practice in this country for almost 20 years. I have seen a lot of people, and I have helped a lot of people die. But I have rarely seen anything like what I saw go on in that home. They were so together and so beautiful with each other. What does that? How does that happen? All she did was start saying 3 nice things a day to him. And as she died, she became well. Do you know what I'm saying? I mean, it's so profound to begin to understand the way that we can impact our life. I could tell you, as I just said, story after story after story. It doesn't matter what's going on with the body. It's a state of mind. She was happier in those last 3 months. She was more filled, not even filled with joy or filled with love, but literally became joy, became love in a way that she had never known. She was an angry, mean lady. I thought to myself, no wonder this guy works all these hours. I mean, you couldn't want to be with her. And she had a transformational experience just by doing this, basically an affirmation. It wasn't an affirmation in the truest sense of the word, but it was, in a way, just by being willing to say something nice and positive. How does that work? Because we are energy, and all energy is made up of positive and negative poles. It simply is. All energy has it's magnetic. I mean, so who we are and how we are has everything to do with what we magnetize. And very much like, and I'm not saying this in a blaming way, it's not like saying, just in a way, we're all responsible for everything that happens and that's just the way it's going to be. I mean, in a way, we really are. But it's not that simple, and it doesn't change that easily. And even once we know these things, you know, I mean, just 2 days ago, I was watching myself just behave so badly with somebody, and I was saying to myself, stop it. And neither of us was saying, no. Shanti, you know better. I don't care. You know, it's just this sort of, it's so silly what we go through. So I'm saying it to you to say, of course, I know. And again, I just want to say, I just happen to be up here talking, but we're all human beings. We all go through life. But this reminds me of a story when I was in medical school, when I was taking oncology. I was doing an oncology, you know, cancer rotation, and I had been a nurse for 14 years before I went back to medical school, and I was an ICU and CCU nurse, and I was in clinical cardiac research, and I published some papers, and I was seriously arrogant. I mean, really seriously, embarrassingly arrogant. And I remember I was sitting in oncology, and this oncologist was teaching us how to feel for lymph nodes all over the body. And she starts showing us these lymph nodes that sit behind the elbow. And I said to her one day, honestly, do you ever really feel any lymph nodes there, just like that? I mean, it's embarrassing for me to tell that story of myself. She said, well, let me just put it this way, Dr. Rubenstone, I was probably a second year medical student. She said, I find a lot more lymph nodes than I would if I didn't look. And, you know, that was many years ago, as you can tell, and I remember what she said to me, because there was so much truth in it. It just rang of truth. So no matter what we can accomplish in this life in terms of being well, it's like they say at the end of every 12-step program, right? It works if you work it. I mean, you're not going to make any progress if you don't decide to make some changes. We have to decide, what would it take for me to be able to put some of this into play in my life? Somebody is standing up here, somebody who's obviously thought a lot about it, researched a lot about it, read a lot about it, and saying all energy can be transformed. There is nothing in our lives that we can't manifest. Nothing. It's simply the truth. You know, if you have a metal bar, there's electrons and protons in that bar. But if it's not a magnetic bar, if it's not a magnet, you know what they're doing. Most of you know anyway. They're just like screaming and running all over the place. They have no order, no sense of direction. What happens if you bring that bar next to a magnetized bar? In an instant, all the electrons go to one end, all the protons go to the other. There becomes a positive pole, a negative pole. We are that. We are that. This isn't just a figure of speech. You know, I want you to really hear this. The physicists are saying what every great spiritual teacher we have any access to historically has been saying to us forever. It's what Jesus said 2013 and a half years ago. It's what Yogananda was saying until 1952 when he died. It's what Krishna said. It's what Buddha said. It's what the mystical Jews say. Moses said. It's what any great spiritual teacher has been trying to tell the scientists. Everything's energy. But now, as we're moving, and we are moving more into an age of energy, I mean, we can see that in the material world, but it's happening spiritually as well. We're literally changing. We're actually coming out of a very dark time for the universe. And whether any of us in this room will live to see it or not, we are basically ascending into a time that's called an age of energy. There's a name for it. There's books written about it. But I don't want to talk about that right now, nor do I want to have to try and prove it, because I can't. But I do want to say that the physicists are finally giving credibility to what the great spiritual teachers have been telling us for a very long time. And the truth is, most of us like to hear that stuff with our minds. If we decide to make any change in our lives and step into the world, this world where miracles are going on all the time. So I decided to follow some Indian man around the world for 8 years, and I saw him speak languages and do things that are humanly impossible. I mean, that man would come up to me all the time and say to me, look, I know that right now you're trying to decide whether to have a child or not. Never spoke to him, not a word, never mentioned it. But take me right, put my face right in his hands and say, when they ask you, Shanti, because I was going up to visit friends of mine who had just had a child a month ago, and I kept saying to my husband, because I actually really did want to have a child, but he didn't at the time. This is where grace descended into my life. But I didn't ever spoke to this man about it. He calls me in one night. You're going up to see your friends, aren't you? I said, yes. He said to me, when they ask you, you tell them, I am your child. This was a great spiritual teacher from India. Not that he was my child, but that my life would be about, meaning God was your child. I mean, whatever word you want to put to that, don't be scared off by my using the word God. You could call it angels, your own higher consciousness, call it whatever you want. That you will be living your life, giving all of the attention that people give to their children. Anybody in this room who has a child knows it's enormous. You're going to be devoting that in a different way. I had never mentioned these things. On and on and on, story after story after story of things that are impossible. But after a while, you start realizing it's all possible. You start realizing that the world that we live in is as silly as people in San Francisco on most summer days thinking that there's no sun. Of course there's a sun. you know, just drive down here to Palo Alto. Just come 30 miles down. There's no clouds down here. We don't pull the fog in off of the bay. It's sunny here. The sun didn't go anywhere. The sun didn't even go anywhere in San Francisco, right? I mean, I'm not being silly. You know, you go to visit people in third world, undeveloped countries, which I've done many times in my life, and you try and explain to them anything about a radio or a television, they just look at you, if they haven't seen it, like it's like you're nuts. You're going to sit here and listen to a ball game that's going on 3,000 miles or 5,000 miles away? Oh, come on. But we know. But if you don't have a receiver, right, you how could you know that? All you need is a receiver. All you need is to go from San Francisco to Palo Alto. All we need to do is get out of our minds. We need to realize, every one of us, to say to ourselves, boy, I really maybe have been living in a very limited way. What are the things I could do that could begin to help me see what the true possibilities are in my life? And although I'm going to tell you that we can manifest a lot of things, mostly these principles work when we're talking about trying to manifest things that are, I just want to use the word, then I'll come back and explain it, dharmic. Dharma means that way of being in the world that is ultimately good for the whole world. It's not just good for you. So can I sit here and say, I want a Porsche, I want a Porsche, I want a Porsche. Will I get a Porsche? Probably not. You know, it just doesn't work at that level. Although, and I mean this, you start finding that when you move through the world with that energy, things just happen. So I play with a man getting ready to get on a plane who just watched me set down a pizza box, right, on top of the garbage can, but there was pizza left and it was in this box, and I set it on top of the garbage can. But I had been in the waiting room for about an hour with a friend, just talking. We had actually meditated a little bit, which was probably it. I go to get on the plane, and the man says, you know, the ticket guy says, that pizza sure looked good. And I said to him, oh, let me go get it for you. And he starts yelling to the whole waiting room, look at this, she's offering me garbage. She's going to go get her food out of the garbage and bring it to me. And I'm like, you know, I want to just disappear. I'm so embarrassed. But I get on the plane. 5 minutes later, the guy walks back. He says to me, come with me, bring your friend. I've been traveling to a medical meeting with a physician friend of mine. I said, I looked at him, he said, come on. Okay, I get up, and he moves us into first class. You know, I have been upgraded in hotels, into suites, more than I can tell you. Things like this, why is that? What is happening? I've already told you how miserable I can be. You could call my husband and ask him. I mean, what is it, you know, that allows those things to happen? You know, remember I said to you, any story I tell you, I had that disclaimer. I'm not telling you that I'm anything special. Quite the contrary. I'm saying to you, I'm absolutely not special. It's just I do a few things and different kinds of energy. You know, I'm practicing as hard as I can. Everybody can do these things. So when I'm telling you all this because I said I couldn't get a Porsche. I don't happen to want a Porsche, by the way. I love my little Volvo. It's adorable, and I'm happy with it. But, you know, good things happen. Even in the material world, good things happen. Why is that? Because we're magnetic, because I've decided to do some practices in my life that I'd like to share with you a little bit, that we call doing these practices wellness. There's no other way to get there. You can't think your way into it. You can't will yourself into it, because what we're talking about is a state that exists beyond mind. Not everybody who gets a PhD in music can write beautiful music. Not everybody who travels to India can speak every language in every state in India. You know, this is why I'm telling you these stories. But this woman who was extraordinarily angry can go home and start acting as if she is love, and love comes to her. They're not really miracles. They're even scientifically provable right now. But we don't believe it. We write it off, and most of us will walk out of here, and we'll go back into our lives, and we'll be tugged by a husband or a wife that annoys us, by a child who's having trouble and we can only focus on that, by a boss we don't like. I mean, all those things that we take up, or quite frankly, even by a perfect partner. And we just think everything's perfect and we have everything we want until, boom, it's gone. There's nothing outside of us, nothing that can bring us eternal happiness. Nothing. It doesn't matter what it is, but it's all in here. And then no matter what happens, you know, I think about this a lot because I have this, I think about it a lot for many reasons, but I have this really almost insane draw. I've had this for years and years and years, to read and know everything about the Holocaust. And I was born and raised Jewish in this life, although I'm not involved with Judaism at all anymore. I mean, other than most people in the world could look at me and know I'm a Jewish woman, but other than that, you know, I don't have any religious practices related to Judaism for many, many, many years. But I'm saying this about reincarnation, so I hope half the room doesn't get up and leave, but so be it. I have this feeling that I must have lived during the Holocaust, and I just came back quickly. I can't figure out why I'm so drawn to it. But one of the things that amazes me in a more intellectual way than this inexplicable draw is, who are the people who survived well? There are people who lived through atrocities that most of us can't even bear to think about for a moment, you know? Or, I mean, I could say the same thing about what's happened. I could not bear to see this movie, 12 Years a Slave, but I could say almost the same things about what's happened in our country, which to some degree is still happening, but nothing like it was. I mean, in and around the Civil War with the black people. It's just, you just can't imagine. Who are the people who survived that well? Meaning they were able to live and know happiness again and forgive their perpetrators and share goodness with other people. If that's not a miracle, I mean, really, what is? If any of you have ever even read one book about the Holocaust or one book about the South here, particularly up to the Civil War, and certainly long, I mean, up to in our lifetime, right? In the 50s, even now, and I know it even now, but certainly it was so accepted and awful then. You can't read one of those books and imagine. I had a woman who I took care of for many years. Her father was very involved in the resistance against Castro. And he had a whole underground trying to get people out of Cuba. And he got caught one day. And when he got caught, they took him and her. She was a little girl. And they put them in a cell, in separate cells, but every day they would bring them together for hours and torture them in front of each other. Every day for hours. Horrible torture. When I met this woman later, she was an adult. She became one of my patients for many years. She was profoundly disfigured by the torture that had gone on. So at some point, they killed her father in front of her. It wasn't a mercy killing either. I mean, it was a brutal, horrible killing. And then sometime later, she escaped. Now, years later, I meet her. She comes to me. She's a beautiful woman. I mean, inside and out, just a beautiful woman. In fact, she's a minister. She just created her whole own thing and started I guess you would call it a church, but at least a ministry. And people came to her like she's, I could see she was wonderful. I felt blessed by her presence in my practice. And I said to her one day, how is it that this could be the case with you? How could you do this? You were tortured, you were brutalized. I mean, all these happened, yet here you are so full of love and positivism and sharing this and teaching people how to live this way. And she said to me, you know, Shanti, somehow it came to me. She said, I heard this as I was escaping. And she was helped to escape. People broke in and whatever happened. She said, the words came to me, they have held you prisoner all these years. If you don't make good choices now, they will hold you prisoner for the rest of your life. And she made a choice not to be a prisoner. And she was so free. Now, what is that? That's wellness. You see, here she is disfigured. I mean, everything what she lived through. But I've thought about that a lot with all these people, even from the Rwandan Holocaust, I've read about it. You know, and you read these stories, and you think, what is it that allows us to see and know something to be true beyond what it looks like is happening, even under such horrible circumstances? If you just lived in your logical mind, you couldn't do that. You know, we have to say, let me try this. Let me try something else. Because it's not like I'm up here saying to people, let me give you a course of a year long of really serious chemotherapy and see what it does to you. Who would do that? Nobody, of course. I'm saying, what if we said, what if I practice smiling 5 minutes several times a day? What if I just practiced smiling? And I mean it. Yogananda used to say, if you're somebody who doesn't smile a lot, you should stand in front of a mirror for a few minutes several times a day and lift up the corners of your mouth. And you know, it sounds so silly, but he was serious. Why did he say it? Because when you lift the corners of your mouth up, you draw energy up. And remember, we're energetic beings. We change everything about ourselves. What if I said, here's an affirmation. Go home and write it. 5 minutes. Start by writing it 5 minutes every day. Write it. I mean, not on your computer. Go out here, buy a beautiful empty book and a pen, and write this affirmation. You know, I do this in my practice. Who's ever here has heard me speak has heard me say this. It's actually, it costs some money to come and see me in that little practice that I do. And people come to see me, and this, my shingle says transformational medicine. And I write these things on prescriptions. Okay, do this. I promise you, you'll start feeling better. Like with Marty, please do it. They go home, they come back 2 weeks later, right? Paying me again. Did you do it? No. Why? And you're back? I mean, like, what? Okay, we'll talk some more. We'll try some. I mean, it's so interesting. If somebody says to you, this could really help you, do it. And it's so harmless. Why would anybody not do it? It just makes no sense. But I'm going to tell you, honestly, the vast majority of people don't. The vast majority of people don't. It's so fascinating to me. I don't understand this totally. The thing I do know, if you read this book, The Miracle of Change, I mean, you'll see, but what's what we all know? Change is hard. For whatever reason, we would all rather sit right where we are, as uncomfortable as it is. Change is never made without inconvenience, even from worse to better. That is the truth. Or this other saying that says, change is movement and movement causes friction. It's just so we don't want to move. We stay where we are. We come to talks like this. We put energy in. Here we are, all of us spending our Wednesday night, you know? And yet to take the next step and actually make some change is so hard for every one of us. Sometimes I watch myself and I say to myself, what is wrong with you? What is wrong with you? Do it. Why would you not do this? You know, if you meditate twice a day, every day, that is your ticket to freedom. That's the ticket for everything you say you want in the world. It doesn't matter what you think you want. If you begin even a little practice of meditation, you take a meditation course, you can take it here, you can take it in Ananda, you can take it anywhere, it doesn't matter. You take a meditation course 5 minutes, twice a day, your life starts changing. It's really remarkable. As we begin to develop a practice of things that get us outside of ourselves. This morning I saw another woman in my practice. She's having a lot of trouble with her daughter. Doesn't matter what it is. I said to her, you guys need to go out and have fun. We sit here and we talk about all the troubles all the time of this 16-year-old. She's a bright and sensitive 16-year-old. So what's the operative word? I don't know. She's bright, she's sensitive, and she's 16. So, you know, there you have it. It's difficult. We all know that. And I said to this woman, she said, what do you think I ought to do? I said, I think you ought to take her to Disneyland for 3 nights. She said to me, come on, I'm serious. I said, no, I'm totally serious. What am I going to tell you to do? Sit down and try and talk sense to your 16-year-old who's out there acting out in every way she can? Be fun with her. Just go to Disneyland. Go home and beg her if you have to. She probably doesn't want to go with you. And if she brings a friend, she's only going to be with a friend, and they're still going to be out doing, they'll probably sneak out while you're sleeping and you'll never even know it. Just say to her, come on, honey, I want to go away with you. We don't have that much more time together. Soon you're going to be fine. Go to Disneyland. I said, you'll see she'll get into it. We have to get ourselves out of our mind. But more than her, you need to learn how to have fun. You're so serious about everything. Take her to Disneyland. Quit trying to process all this stuff. She doesn't want to do that. You know? So I had to write her a prescription to go to Disneyland. You know, I said, see, I haven't wrote her one of my controlled substances prescriptions. This is a serious prescription pad, I told her. But you know, even something like, because it makes more sense to more people. I'll tell you the truth. This is the truth. And I know this to be true. But I imagine some of you won't believe me. No matter what else we say, we can talk about smiling. We can say, you know, it's not so quirky to think about doing one nice thing for people. What's that saying that was going around? Sorry, I can't pull it up right now. Pay it forward's another one. But any one of those, it was bumper stickers and all that. Like, do something nice for somebody today. Of course, that is really wonderful. You know, there have been huge studies done with gratitude. People waking up, all you need to do is wake up every morning and write down 3 things that you feel grateful for. You're not allowed to say the same thing every day. How simple could that be? It takes a minute of your time. 3 things you're grateful for. How about starting with just like, wow, I woke up this morning. There's something to be grateful for, right, for most of us. I mean, but whatever it is, the sun's shining, I have a roof over my head, I'm gonna eat today, whatever it is. And you write 3 things, they've done studies. People can do that for 3 months, stop it, and 1 year out, they'll still tell you that their life is much better than it was before they did it. So there's a lot of things that we can do, but ultimately, what I wanna say is none of them will take you all the way there except a practice of meditation. And that's just simply the truth. Because meditation is the only thing of all of that, whatever we're talking about, that helps you bring your energy up to this point between the eyebrows, which is the spiritual center in every one of us, whether we know it or not. And it is a place, because it's not really an anatomical place in our body, that is completely beyond mind. It's beyond logic, it's beyond reason, it's beyond everything that will hold us back ever. It is a place that is joy, that is calmness, that is peace, that is love. This is what they mean when they say God is love. We're love, you know? We're love. We are everything. Excuse me for 1 minute while this nice little Jewish girl quotes the Bible, but when Jesus says, everything I am, you are too, and more, what is he saying to us? He's saying we're all made of the same stuff. We're all a manifestation of divine energy. You know, in Kabbalism, the Kabbalistic Jews, they really believe that there was a one presence at some point, one. And suddenly that was just thrown out into the world, a million, billions and billions of different sparks. And it became that which they call holy, but it became everything. So they say, let's bless each other, because we're always blessing that which is holy in each of us. That's why the Indians do this. That's why so many people find this place, from the Indians to the Catholics who on Ash Wednesday do that, to the Kabbalistic Jews, everybody doing the same things. Why? Did they get into cahoots and decide to say, let's just get out there and fool everybody and make all this up? How could they do that? It's because those who can perceive the truth, those who know the truth, understand this is the spiritual center of our body. We should be directing our energy here as much and as often as we can. Even if you don't understand it, have a little faith. Prove me wrong. Do what Mari did. Focus here as much as you can. Just constantly be bringing your energy here. It's such a simple thing to do. But it is the only way that will get you out of your mind. And as long as you're in your mind, The mind is, it's its job to be rational, to be doubting, to be questioning, to be saying, to be ambivalent. That's the job of the mind. You never get out of that. You cannot get out of it. And guess what, guys? The better your mind is, the worse shape you're in. So smartness doesn't help here. In fact, it works against you. You have to transcend that. So ultimately, although all of these other things, I made a whole list of them here. Think good thoughts, because as you think, so you will become, because remember, we're all energy and blah, blah. Yeah. See illness as an opportunity, not as an obstacle. There's a whole list. I should have made a copy for you, but I didn't. But maybe we could after class. But it doesn't matter. It's all things that I've talked about. Listen to uplifting music. I often tell my clients, go to East West, find Lee. I think Lee's actually here tonight. At least he was when I came in. Lee's the man who orders all the music. Tell him Shanti sent you and that she wants you to buy music that's inspired. Not just nice music, certainly not that kind of music that grabs us by our lower chakras and drags us around, which I liked in the old day too. Remember I told you my husband and I danced, right? I danced with Santosh. But no, not that kind of music. Not because it's bad. There's nothing that's bad. It's just like, where do you want to be living? Do you want to be living in terms of the material world? Listen to that music. You want to be living like this, heart open, uplifted, where you walk into a room and somebody says to you, I want to give you an upgrade tonight. I don't even know why. I don't want you paying for your dinner. I'd like to give you dinner in this restaurant tonight. Come on up here into first class with me. What is that? It's just practicing this. It's wellness. It is what wellness is. And it doesn't matter what illnesses or diseases or anything anybody has, we can all do that. You know this thing called a full yogic breath in Hatha yoga, but you wind up inhaling in you, and you inhale with your belly out instead of all of us trying to hold our bellies in, but you let your belly come out first, which lets your diaphragm drop so you can get more air, and that's the reason for it. But you wind up like this, and I often thought, if we just stood like this, couple minutes a day. It's just so positive and so wonderful. So, let me stop. Finally, I just can't believe I just kept talking all that time. Comments or questions? Yes. Yes.
Oh, you had like a saying, the first part of it, miracles are natural, but I didn't get the
Yeah, second. Miracles are natural. When they do not occur, something has gone wrong. When they do not occur, so that was Thich Nhat Hanh who said that. Yes, we'll try and get some. I'll try and get some copies made when we go out there. Yes.
Shanti, I'm so grateful you went to check to see what your mixed answer is.
Autism is a very interesting, fascinating condition. We're seeing a lot more of it. The autistic children who are joyful are that way. And then there are seem to be autistic people who are totally, they're paralyzed with their fear. So I don't know. But you know, anybody who you see like what you're describing, obviously, is just pure joy.
Well, they created that environment. I just got it.
Yeah. Well, that's fabulous. Yeah. Good for you and good for them. Yes, I'm really all for nature. Almost all of the workshops that I do, I lead a lot of weekend-long workshops up outside of Nevada City, and they always involve time in nature. In fact, there's an author, I'm sure his books are here, Joseph Cornell, who first started writing a book called Sharing Nature with Children, but then expanded that to just sharing nature. And he does these things that are called games, but they're not really games. They're remarkable experiences that we can go out into nature and have that help us realize, and I use that word, right, because it leaves the mind out. It's, you know, it's what Brahms was talking about. When you realize or perceive something, you know, the way Einstein did, I mean, I'm sure many people in this room know, Einstein suddenly knew E equals mc squared. It came to him. It took him 10 years to scientifically prove it. But the whole time he knew it to be true. So these games that we play when we go out into nature, and now I've taken to always include them, like for a few hours, one afternoon or something, in my, as long as it's a full weekend at least that I'm leading a workshop, they're really remarkable because they help us have that experience of being one with everything. So that just quits being words. I mean, what do those words mean? I never understood those words. We're one with everything. Here we are in this body, separate from everything, and we're trying to get logically and understand that we're one with everything. And it's just virtually impossible until you have that experience. And once you have the experience, even though you're still in this body and you're still, we're all going to go out, we're all going to get into our separate cars and go where we're going, to our separate homes, but you start really beginning to know how deeply, how truly we are all part of the same energy and just how connected we are. And it's really an interesting thing to think. There's a book out here by Dr. Emoto, who's a Japanese physician who learned how to photograph water in crystalline form. And he does all of these phenomenal things where he, you know, in the first experiment he did is he looked at a glass of water and he said, I hate you. You're tasteless. You're bland. I don't like you. I never like drinking you. And then he quickly took a picture of it. And the pictures are scary. I mean, you almost can't look at them. They're so ugly, disformed and dark colors. And then he said, takes the same little glass of water and he said, I didn't mean that. Of course I love you. You're perfect just as you are. Absolutely perfect. You sustain life. You give me everything I need. Quickly snaps the picture again. Beautiful mandalas. Beautiful. It's hard to describe. So, you know, we are 70-some percent water. So when we look at somebody across the room and we go, would you look at that ridiculous person in those plaid pants? I mean, you know, or what is that person doing eating that banana split? Don't they see that they're already 30 pounds? All those things that we do, they have such a profound impact on people. So if nothing else, when I'm with people that aren't ready to be well, I just think good thoughts about them. I just hold them in a place because I know that what I'm thinking is having a profound effect on them. This is how they could do studies at UCSF and Harvard. People in congestive heart failure, people with pneumonias, and people all over the world would pray for them. And they wouldn't even know they were being prayed for, but they get better faster than people who are not prayed for. How could that be? It's because it's all energy. Yeah. They're vulnerable, but you know, Bernie, it's interesting because they also, and this has been studied a lot, I just don't have time, I wish I had time to tell this story, but I don't. But I would say to anybody who's interested, when you go home, search on YouTube, I don't know, put in the words, I can't remember the kid's name now, if anybody knows. No, it's a young boy who was a fighter pilot in World War II, and at about 1 year old, he started having horrible nightmares. And I don't know how you can search that in YouTube. But they're sensitive, but they come in remembering. That by about age 3, it starts leaving them. Depends on the child, but between 3, 4, 5. And they also have a kind of strength and resilience because they... I do feel what you're saying. I'm not countering it because, boy, it's such a precious time. I always think about children who are given parents who know something about this and who understand the gift that they, the parent, has been given to guide this child, not to try and make them everything we think they ought to be, but to really hold them and guide them. But they know more than we know, and they're strong and resilient, and they know the truth. And I think we have to honor that in them. Almost all children, it's rare for a child to come in, but you're right, with everybody and everything all the time, really, to be, just start training yourself that you think good thoughts, say good things. Let me just interrupt for 1 minute. Anybody who wants to put their name on some email list, wherever it is, please do. Is there a list around that anybody knows of? Yeah, just write your name and email if you're interested in hearing about anything else that I do, or if you'd like to be invited, you can come off of that. It's not a lot. It's once every 3 or 4 months you'll get an email, but you can always come off of it. I just want to say that because people, it's 9 o'clock. Please feel free to go whenever you want to go, and I really appreciate that you are all here, so thank you all for coming. But I want to hear what this woman has. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes, please. That's why I'm just giving everybody permission to go. It's late.
What's your greatest joy at Ananda?
Ananda means bliss and joy, and Ananda is my joy. It is the center of my life. It's how I... Swami Kriyananda has who founded Ananda has taught me everything I know. He's a beautiful spiritual teacher who managed to take what are very complex teachings. We all know that. If you ever pick up a Bible or the Bhagavad Gita or the Quran or anything and try and read it on your own, it's like, what's this? But to have a translator for all of that, and one who moves from the heart and speaks of the world as love, not as a tough place or a thing, but really who starts helping you see the beauty and the divine in everyone and everything, that is a blessing. That man has been an absolute, like from The Sound of Music, somewhere in my youth and childhood days, I must have done something good. Did you have a question?
My mother used to always say, I wanted to get your thoughts on this, that we as children choose our parents.
Yes. Well, I definitely believe that. It's not as conscious as that, but it is, I'm about to teach a 4-week class at Ananda on Wednesday nights, every Wednesday in April, called Death, Dying, Karma, and Reincarnation. And it would be if any of you are interested, please join us. You can go to anandapaloalto.org. You have to put in all of those words, and you'll see this class that I'm teaching, because it's too much to talk about, and reincarnation. But yes, we are, I believe, drawn into families, as difficult as that might be at times, or as wonderful, that give us the opportunity to continue to grow spiritually, which is really the whole purpose of this life. You know, you could just think you're just getting into a body so that you could move on and make your next bit of growth, however much we do in a life. It's just like sort of hitchhiking your way across country. You know, you want to get to San Francisco from New York, and you might get in many vehicles to do it. I just think we get into many different bodies to get where we're going, and we make as much progress in each life as we're willing to put out energy. Yogananda says, the greater the will, the greater the flow of energy. The greater the flow of energy, the greater the magnetism. So I think, that's true. We all know the more energy that runs, the more magnetic, literally, electricity. I mean, we can think of it however we want. So it doesn't just come to us, It's we have to work at it. And I think it's really challenging for many people. I watch, this is very interesting. I speak here usually about every 3 months. People come, and the response is usually very good. People seem to like being here, and I go home with a whole list. But if I ask at the beginning of each talk, as I did tonight, how many of you have been here before? One, maybe two people. And I often think to myself, and this is not a personal thing, why are people not coming back? If I write a prescription for somebody, you should go home and play your instrument that you put down 30 or 40 years ago, but music's trying to happen to you, or go to Disneyland with your daughter, or whatever it is. Why do we not do those things? It's an interesting thing. We have to put out a lot of energy. So yes, we come in with an opportunity, but how many people see things? When I was very young, I had to go into a Christian bookstore to buy a gift for a Christian friend of mine. That was a big deal because I was Jewish, and walking in with all those crosses freaked me out a little bit. But I bought this, it's not a placard because it's paper, I can't think of the word, a banner, this little banner that said, and I was young, I might have been 14 or 15, but I still have it. It says, the difference between a stumbling block and a stepping stone is how you use it. And it's just such wisdom, isn't it? So life is filled with opportunities for us to grow. But what is it that gets in our way and doesn't have us do that? I don't exactly know. We just stay with on the fearful side of it or the familiar side of it. Okay.
Attachments, too.
Attachments, yes. All right, they get mad at me out of here because they have a store there. So thank you all very much.